Steve Early. Welcome to KABU.
Thanks for having me on again, Bill.
For many years, Steve Early worked as a labor journalist. His books and articles, like A New Labor Movement for the New Century, they were very influential with activists fighting the good fight for union democracy, rank and file activism, and put the movement back into the labor movement. He's now also writing on politics, recently published the book Refinery Town, Big Oil, Big Money, and the Remaking of an American City. Rich in California, mostly working class, mostly people of color, where Steve lived. That's the remake city that Steve wrote about. Part of that remaking came with a great uprising, electoral and movement building through the Richmond Progressive Alliance to transform the police and policing in that city. Steve Early is very active in the Progressive Alliance and all its struggles. So, Steve, tell us about the Richmond Progressive Alliance, how they gained power, why they tackled police reform right away.
Well, as I recount in the book that you mentioned, Refinery Town, progressives in Richmond started running for city council and mayor 14 years ago and began having increasing success. For 8 years, our city was the largest in the country with a green mayor, Gail McLaughlin, who was one of the founding members of the Richmond Progressive Alliance. And over time, she was joined by others on the city council to the point where we now have a progressive supermajority. Five RPA members out of seven members of the city council. You know, Richmond is a city that historically had high levels of street crime and violence, problems with gangs and drug dealing and shootings. So public safety was an issue that progressives, once they gained city hall influence, had to grapple with. And they did that by working with the city manager to hire a very effective police chief by the name of Chris Magnus, who was now nationally known as a police reformer and proponent of community policing. And over a 10-year period, under Magnus's leadership, the composition of the police department was greatly diversified, the culture of policing changed, and relations between police and the community, both in day-to-day interactions and in policing of public demonstrations and protests, was greatly improved. The level of public safety now is much higher than it was before, to the point where in this year's election for mayor, a candidate on the left running against the incumbent Liberal Democrat has actually proposed that there be cuts in spending on the police and that funds now be diverted to other city programs that might help change some of the conditions that produce crime and violence and cause us to need a fully staffed police department.
Let's talk a little bit about the changing the police, their behavior, the way they operate in the community, their goals, and also their commitment to sort of constitutional government and respect for the citizen. It seems to me that Richmond shows the way.
Well, when Chris Magnus, who was our police chief for more than 10 years, took over in 2005, Richmond very much had a police department that operated on the all-too-common military model. The police were viewed by many residents of this 80% non-white city as being an occupying army. The police department at that time used street teams in high-crime neighborhoods. They swept people up. They hassled people. There was a lot of stop and frisk activity. So the first step in the process of police reform was to really redefine the role of a police officer. Chief Magnus assigned a lot more officers to regular beats, told them that they were going to be evaluated and their career advancement would be dependent on their ability to build productive, constructive, long-term relationships with individual residents and neighborhood groups and community leaders. The police were redeployed in ways that supported civilian efforts to reduce gang violence and drug trafficking and human trafficking in Richmond. Police began to work much more constructively with churches and youth groups and all kinds of nonprofit organizations. So over time, people began to view the police as allies in the struggle to make Richmond safer and healthier as a city, not as the enemy. The level of crime and violence was greatly reduced, many fewer homicides, and Richmond has only had two officer-involved fatal shootings in the last 14 years.
In some cities, community policing was just used for snitching. You get people to tell on their neighbors and then invade the neighbor's house. How do you make sure that this community policing actually reflects respect for people and and isn't, in fact, part of a right-wing sort of suppressive effort?
Well, you do have to diversify the police force itself. And when Chief Magnus took over in 2005, the Richmond Police Department was not as representative of the diversity of the community as it is today. And so one of the things he did was encourage some early retirements, people who did not want to be part of a changed police department culture. And he was able to hire over time many more women, many more police officers from minority backgrounds, and some who were Richmond residents and were willing to live in Richmond, in the community that they serve. One of the challenges we know is that about 20% of all police officers in the country have military backgrounds. And sometimes that's not a problem in terms of their individual behavior. Other times it's a big problem because studies have shown that police officers who are veterans, particularly of recent wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, have a greater tendency to use firearms, to be the subject of police brutality complaints, and to have other problems on the job that may be the result of service-related conditions acquired while serving overseas. So sometimes hiring people, for example, from military backgrounds who've been part of an occupying army in foreign countries is not the best way to reorient how police departments function in cities where we need to get away from that model of policing relating to the community.
Right. And you also had a real independent review board. And, in fact, disciplining of police and forcing those police out.
Very definitely. In Richmond, we have two mechanisms for that. One of the big complaints about the police many places is that when there's a police brutality incident, it's cops investigating cops. Internal affairs investigations are conducted by the police department itself. Richmond's one of the few cities that has what's called an Office of Professional Accountability. It's headed by a civilian. It's located in City Hall, and that's the arm of city government that investigates complaints about police misconduct. These are not internal affairs investigations anymore. They're independent ones. And in one recent case, the independent investigator recommended the firing of an officer and the suspension and demotion and reprimand of about eight others. We also have a civilian police review commission that has the power to hire its own independent investigator and subpoena cops and require them to testify and initiate investigations even where there haven't been civilian complaints. So there's two layers of oversight outside the department.
Steve, do you believe that with all of that, have the police really changed or are they just complying? Is there an actual commitment, in fact, to a very different model of policing and to respect for constitutional rights?
Well, I think you're generalizing by about a department of city government that employs 180 to 200 people, consumes 60% of the city budget, which is, one of the issues being debated right now. Is that too much, too little? Can we afford cuts in police staffing to invest more in other city programs? Police department's not perfect. No arm of city government here or anywhere else is. It's composed of human beings who make mistakes and come to their jobs with all kinds of personal and political baggage. But I think overall, the culture has changed for the better. And surveys of Richmond residents show that people view the police much more positively here, certainly than they did in the past, and more positively than people, for good reason, the police in many other cities.
This is KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick here talking with Steve Early, a very influential labor journalist now writing on U.S. politics. And Steve, we're now facing an ominous problem in Oakland and in Berkeley and San Francisco and New York and in Portland. The ominous problem, of course, is the right wing. Across the country, the relations between the police and the left have really become much more poisonous over the last several years. And Trump's Republican Party is aligning with the violent far right. And the violence, of course, is against the left. The alt-right is courting the police, and they have a good deal of success in many cities like Portland.
When civilians and police department personnel are on the same page, you get a much stronger united response to problems like hate crimes. I mean, we've had a couple of incidents in Richmond in recent years involving threats of violence against a member of the Sikh community, someone connected with the Muslim community in Richmond. And in both cases, not only was there a very aggressive and effective police investigation, prosecution of those responsible, but a rallying of the community to show people that the community was on their side, and police leadership showed up, elected leaders, and other religious leaders. So I think, again, it's not something you leave to the police department or civilians alone.
That's a good model. That's the way, it seems to me, of showing these right-wing violent factions who are trying to create disorder, create fear, as well as then proclaim themselves as the forces of law and order and supporting the police, which is happening here in Portland. That's part of the good model. Portland, unfortunately, whereas the community does arise in that way, the police they've supported the alt-right against the left demonstrators and, in fact, attacked left demonstrators, mostly peaceful, maybe a few soda cans. And the police chief here, Daniel Outlaw, said on the Lars Larson show that the complaints by the left of an unprovoked police attack, she said that was just whining because we kicked their butt. Well, that's something right out of a fascist playbook. It's completely unconstitutional. It's outside the realm of police behavior.
And that was the police chief herself?
Yes, the police chief herself. Now, she sort of walked that back.
All I can say, in the Richmond context, any police officer, not to mention a police chief, was quoted publicly or in the press boasting about kicking anybody's butt, there'd be a huge uproar about that, because that is obviously not the tenor and tone that's been set here for the last 10 or 12 years. Now, prior to 2005, that was the policing style. Go out and kick as many butts and bust as many people as you can. And that's what the city's been trying to get away from for more than a decade. For police leadership to talk in those terms sends a terrible message down the chain of command to patrol officers.
Steve Early, how do we stop that message?
Well, again, I don't think it's an overnight solution, but part of the strategy of electoral change at the municipal level and electing progressives to city councils and making the mayors and getting them into positions in city government where they have the ability to change police behavior in cities like Richmond has improved policing in situations where people are exercising their rights to protest. I mean, in 6 years that I've lived here, there have been a lot of environmental protests, some involving civil disobedience, marches through the city, sit-downs. We have a number of tempting local targets, a Chevron refinery, a big rail yard, a port, lots of places where environmentalists and others in the community have gathered and engaged in protests. When the police are on a shorter leash, when they have redefined their mission, when they are accountable to the public, and you have progressive municipal leadership setting the tone, it is possible to better negotiate the ground rules for how people committing civil disobedience get arrested, how the police handle situations. There's more coordination with the police, but you're not going to have that, obviously, when the police aren't trusted and when they are hostile openly to the aims and goals and politics of one particular group of protesters over another.
When the alt-right comes to a city, they deliberately sort of provoke and draw attention to themselves and demand police protection. The left, in fact, we've had some enormous rallies which have been very successful in some ways, but they've been very unsuccessful in other ways because the police and the alt-right have been able to provoke enough violence. We have to be really careful. And I think we can also reach out to the police themselves, to the police union. Most police are not brutes. They're just sort of collecting their salaries and trying to reach that 20 years for retirement. Steve, why don't you comment on that?
I'm for trying to find common ground. I would not minimize the difficulty. As I mentioned earlier, one of the debates in our current mayoral election this year is how much of the city budget should be spent on the police. And the progressive candidate this year, 27-year-old African-American leader of the Richmond Progressive Alliance, who's already on the city council for the last 2 years, great community organizer, rent control advocate. He's running for mayor against an incumbent Liberal Democrat. And our candidate, Melvin Willis, has called for 20% cut in spending on public safety. And, you know, there's been somewhat of a backlash against that, certainly from the police union, which would, over 4 years, see a reduction in the size of its bargaining unit if Melvin was elected mayor and he implemented this program. And of course, his opponent is trying to arouse fears among voters that the gains that have been made in violence reduction, crime reduction, would be reversed if we tried to utilize this peace dividend of community policing. So, you know, when a police union feels threatened by proposed budget cuts, by curtailment of pension and benefit coverage that's been negotiated over the years through collective bargaining, it's pretty easy to get into an adversarial situation that pits not only the police against elements of the community, but sometimes the police against other public employees working for the same city.
The issues are really complex. It seems to me it is possible to build a strong pull within the police and reach out to them in some ways to make sure that when a crunch comes and the right begins trying to organize a takeover of the state, that the police remain constitutional. I believe we have a strong position, actually, because we have a huge amount of public support for that, but we have to be able to mobilize it and not allow this dynamic of police hostility to the left to continue. Steve, why don't you take the last word?
Well, I mean, Richmond and was some one of the first cities in the country to declare itself more than 10 years ago to be a sanctuary city. And that, of course, you know, has implications for local policing, positive ones, in my view. If, you know, local police are cooperating with a crackdown on immigrants conducted by federal officials, it undermines their ability to rebuild trust and confidence. And, you know, immigrant community members won't report crimes, and whatever gains you're making towards community policing will be unraveled. So at least here, the police department, I'm not sure every member of it, you know, is in favor of this policy, has for more than 10 years, you know, been told you don't cooperate with people who are rounding up immigrants and trying to send them off to detention centers. So even the initiative Sanctuary Cities, I think, is one way of weaning, if that's possible, local police forces away from being in total lockstep with others in our society, certainly in the Trump administration, who want to take a much more militarized approach to public safety as they define it.
Steve Early, thanks a lot for talking to us. Keep up the good work in Richmond. Let's hope that example universalizes across the country. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me on the show.